To hear part two, keep listening.
There was a lot of negative response towards health professionals in the study, with 61% of participants saying interactions with a health professional were actually detrimental to their recovery. What role should doctors or health professionals have in helping those with schizophrenia on their recovery journey?
From the research, I think it's probably not so much the health professional per se. If you looked at the difference between the health professionals that were named as helpful versus the health professionals that were named as unhelpful, it's the relationship that was created.
Definitely.
So they've still got the same training, they've still got the same kind of job role and all that sort of stuff. So some were named as helpful, some were named as not helpful. And when we listened to what people said was helpful, it was that they actually gave a damn. They went beyond their normal responsibilities. They saw me and not just responded to the illness. They cared. You know, this isn't rocket science. And yet the ones that were named as unhelpful were quite sterile and quite seeing the person as an object.
There's also this notion that people who were able to do that were rule breakers.
Exactly.
That they to see the person, like just going, oh, let's go for a coffee, could break the rule.
So there was a certain stigma around actually talking
of
to
what professionals were allowed to do.
Yeah, okay.
Well, this professional boundaries.
Boundaries gets in the road of. And another thing that that I found really, not that I found it surprising, but it was the fact that when we asked people about what was it about them, how were they able to recover, no one had ever asked them. Professionals had never asked someone, what is this like for you? You know, so if you think about that and not asking those basic questions to understand the person's experience.
Or wanting to understand.
Yeah, because there is that huge disparity between what health professionals define as what is recovery versus what a consumer might think is recovery.
Exactly. And to even for someone to be curious enough to try and understand that world says actually you're letting that expertise down a bit in order to understand the person's expertise.
Yeah, you do. It takes a lot. You know, you, as a health professional, you spend a lot of years studying and you think you come out as an expert and you understand this stuff. And if you go in there and being the expert on someone else's life when they've got serious mental health challenges, it doesn't work so well.
Are there certain conversations or methods that people living with schizophrenia can use with their health professionals if they might not have a wide range of choice in developing a relationship to get to that point?
I like to kind of expect that it was the health professionals that would be thinking around what to do. But I think it's around coming in as saying, I mean, I always think now when I see a health professional, can I assess you as to see your relevance in my life? You know, if I was to recruit you to my team, what would I be looking for? So quite often we go cap in hand to a professional instead of thinking, switching the tables and saying, I'm wondering what you see you can add to my life.
Yeah.
What skill set do you bring? What values do you align with that also align with mine? Are you signed up to the vision that I want for my life?
These because if you really can't,
if you can't, then I can't afford to have you on my team. So these are the things where I don't think we're game enough to ask yet. But at the same time, if we were, I think that would start to shape health professionals thinking about why am I showing up in this person's life? Is it the same understanding that they have? Are we actually on the same pathway together? One of the turning points in my life came when I realised that the health professionals I had in my life were on a different track. And I was expecting them, you know, I was a bit of a princess. I was expecting them to get me from here to there and I'd just sit back and wait for them to deliver my life back to me. And then I realised that they actually were planning a whole different scenario. And at that point I thought, why am I looking to them to get my life back when they've got a different vision?
It goes straight back to responsibility, doesn't it?
And my responsibility. Yeah. My responsibility.
Self-determination.
To actually say, hang on, I've sat here passively expecting them that they know best, that they're taking me in the same direction, but we'd never had a conversation about that. And that was a really important learning for me Now, my life from that point didn't go, you know, every day in every way I'm getting better and better, but I changed the position of how I showed up in my own life.
I wanted to touch quickly on the topic of medication within the report. It seems both necessary for recovery, but some participants spoke about it negatively at the same time. What insights did you find from this study about how people responded to medication?
I think for me, the word that termed it, that we, it's not that they liked it. It's that they learnt to accept it. And I think there's a big difference between, yes, I see this as the most helpful thing and I couldn't survive without it, to I actually have to develop a relationship with it. You know, I might not love it, but I can accept it so I actually can do other stuff in my life.
Yeah, how can I use it so it works for me?
Yeah. And even with the, like in this research, people that we were inquiring with were on some of the older medications.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was some thinking that, oh, maybe it's because of that particular kind of generation of medications produced horrific side effects. But when this research was also repeated in the US, in new modern medications, the same yes. challenges, the same kind of, I don't like the medication, it causes side effects, it makes my life more difficult, emerged.
Yeah, and to say that, we did replicate the work in Boulder, Colorado, in the US, and also in Trieste in Italy, and found the same things, and that were in that was in the 2000s.
That's fascinating, isn't it? That yes. no matter where you are, the same patterns yeah. come up over and over yeah. again.
And I think yeah. part of it's not necessarily, yes, the medication is hard. You know, it produces some really difficult side effects. It's more about the prescribing of it being done to you.
Yeah.
As you will take this and there are no other options. And I think from a lived experience perspective, we want to explore other ways of managing it and medication not necessarily being the only thing. And if we don't have a good relationship with our health professional that we're free to kind of raise this, you know, how much are they willing to experiment with this, then feel like we're kind of a slave to it.
Yeah, you lose that sense of agency in the process, don't you? Which
yeah, and people just yeah. stop taking the medication anyway.
There's a psychiatrist that I did some work with in recent years, and he had a wonderful phrase of saying to his patients, and I call him one of the very recovery-oriented psychiatrists, and he'd say to someone, especially men, he'd say, I've got a truckload of medication here that can wipe out every symptom you've got, but it'll also give you many side effects that you don't want. So we need to have a conversation about how many symptoms you're prepared to tolerate and how many side effects you don't want. There's nothing that's going to wipe it out and not give you side effects.
And there's no one medication for one person. It really is a trial and error. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to that because what works for one person isn't going to work for the next. And so people have to be approached as individuals with medication.
I used to think that recovery for me was being off medication. I thought that was the indicator of success, and I've learned that it's not. It's much more about how I see myself as using it to aid my ability to lead and live my life rather than its presence or absence in my life.
Listening to all of this, you can really see why self-determination was such an important factor in terms of recovery.
And finding the coping mechanisms
yeah.
that work for you.
What role does the stigma of schizophrenia play when it comes to beginning that journey of recovery? Because obviously it can be a very overwhelming feeling with a diagnosis.
Well, is it stigma or is it discrimination? Recovery
it's an interesting
and
question.
Lived experience is all about human rights. We have a right to, you know, to live in a community that provides support and live a life like everyone else. So is it stigma or is it discrimination?
And I think this is a really complex phenomenon because I think we anticipate being discriminated against and so we internalise this sense of being different, which is what stigma is about. I'm different to you and the way that I'm different is not socially valued. So I get a sense that, you know, I can't go out or I can't do something or I won't be welcome somewhere. So I participate in that myself.
So the self-stigma.
The self-stigma is, and so at the end of the day, I was a little bit surprised that 49% of people only spoke about stigma because we're all told, oh, it's stigma, it's stigma, it's stigma that stops people. But only 49% of people talked about that. And yes. I thought about that for a while. Why is it that people, you know, only 49% of people thought that that was an interesting thing to raise and a difficulty, is because probably by the time they got to talk to us, they were already in this active part of their recovery. And they'd already negotiated their way around discriminating people and discriminating environments. So it wasn't the first thing that comes to their mind about their recovery. If they'd probably been asked earlier when they were first diagnosed, it may have come up. But I think people, you get to a stage in your recovery journey that you don't take on the discrimination. You're stronger about that. And you don't even see it by the time you get to a point. And therefore, you're not projecting it either. You're not going out and saying to people, oh, you know, I have schizophrenia as the first way of introducing yourself. You have a different way of engaging in your community and in your relationships. So people then don't relate to you as different.
Because it is in the hands of the public, isn't it, to really eliminate stigma or even discrimination, because a lot of these signals aren't able to change. It's the response to those signals which need to change.
And I think it's even not the community.
No. Yeah.
I think it starts with what we call professional stigma or institutionalized stigma. Yeah.
Yes.
So you think about it, you know, we get a diagnosis, we're given that by a professional, mm-hmm. and then we enter services. And everything in that service subtly, very subtly, reinforces that we're different from other people.
Right.
So we start to swallow this, that I'm different. We go to different groups, we go to different places, we don't, you know, we kind of get different privileges because of an identity with this. And so subtly over time, we start to internalise, I am different. Then we go and, you know, I might go and join the local netball club or the local football club, and I've got a sense that I'm different. So I'm popping up in that environment saying, hi, I'm different. And then we're surprised that the community treats us differently. So I don't think it, I think it shows up in the community, but I think it starts.
It begins even further
it
back.
It starts way
all the way from the
back,
beginning.
All the way from the beginning. So we're tackling the wrong end.
It's a really deep-rooted problem, isn't it?
Well, I'm wondering if, you know, you're talking about problems and redesigning it.
Yeah.
I think we've been tackling stigma and discrimination from the wrong end. I think we need to start where it's actually born.
Flip it on its head. Never thought of it like that before.
It's because no community anti-stigma campaign has ever worked.
No.
If anything, it's actually reinforced a sense
and you
of difference.
To look at the role of media and how things are.
Yeah, especially in pop culture. And
it's exactly.
Yeah.
Things are portrayed.
So because we're tackling the wrong. We're tackling where it shows up as opposed to where it starts.
Do you think there was a single biggest outcome from this research, whether it was the significance of conducting lived experience research or a result that came from the findings of the survey? Was there something which really stood out and sort of echoed through the mental health space?
I think for me, and Barbara might differ because I'm not a, you know, researcher by all the, you know, bells and whistles behind it. But for me, when you stand back from the results and you look at even the top 50 themes that came out, something spoke really loudly to me. It was that the ones that were most frequently talked about, you know, self-determination, understanding, you know, my illness, finding meaning, taking responsibility, even that bit about, you know, having a purpose, they all come from internal. They're not something that can be created by someone else or by a service. And the things that we think help people weren't named as frequently. Support groups, family and friends, health professionals, medication. They were mentioned, but they weren't on the top of the pop list. No. So for me, it actually shows that we're also focusing in our health systems on the wrong energy. How do we resist impeding some of those internal efforts? And how do we create environments where they get an opportunity to strengthen and to flourish? If we're just thinking about, well, we've just got to send someone to a support group, or we've got to get them on medication, we've got to get them to take responsibility, just focusing on the external application of recovery, we will never, ever change the status quo.
And so I agree with everything Helen said. And I also think it's, in terms of a research perspective, it's about thinking about, well, who is the expert here and who does hold the knowledge and how do you find it? And it's really important about being very clear about the questions that you want to ask and taking that curious stance of who is the expert here and who are you going to learn from? And clearly the people in the study, you know, they were very clear about what was important to them. They held that knowledge and it was different to what...
professionals thought.
What professionals thought, and that really stood out.
And I think that the other thing that stands out for us, it's a bit humbling, is that we tried to come up with a thematically defined, research-defined definition of recovery.
Yeah.
And we didn't, and we failed. And why did we fail? And you can go back to the uniqueness of it. Up until then, and probably still now, people had only tried to define recovery from their own perspective, like individually. Yeah. This is what I think recovery is. And you look at some of the definitions out there that are still popular. They're written by one person. We tried to get a collective, statistically informed definition by 60 or 57 people. And we failed because the highest... the one component that what people said it was only at 37%. If we look at like our Australian politics, 63% then say it didn't say it was that. Interestingly, the thing when I ask people, when I ask professionals about what do you think people think recovery is about, the highest thing that they say, oh, you know, having friends, you know, having hope, having being happy. They name all this stuff.
Yeah.
But the 37% thing that that people said, 37% of people said, was taking responsibility.
And that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much to our guests, Helen Glover and Dr. Barbara Tooth, for taking the time to come on the podcast and speak to us. It's been a real privilege, and it's been really insightful to learn about how consumers define what recovery is to them. And I think there's a lot we can take away from today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.